Good afternoon. You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM, broadcasting to the Fraser Valley, broadcasting from the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus on the traditional and unceded territory of the Stolo people. I am your host, Sarjeet Atwal. I have a great episode for you today, an interview with the Abbotsford Police Department's Chief Constable, Mike Sir. We will be talking about the opiate drug crisis and crime in general in the city of Abbotsford. Thank you for joining us. I have the great privilege and honor to be joined by Chief Constable Mike Sir of the Abbotsford Police Department. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Absolutely, Sergio.
A great honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
And congratulations once again on your achievement of winning the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. Well deserved.
Well, thank you. And likewise to you. Absolutely impressive to hear everything that you've done. You are so deserving. And congratulations to you.
Thank you, sir. And I wanted to start off by asking you about the opiate crisis in the Fraser Valley. It's affecting everyone in British Columbia, every city in British Columbia. But I wanted to focus on the Fraser Valley because of the position you hold. And I wanted to zero in on one topic. The government just recently changed some rules and regulations on people can carry small amounts of some certain drugs. Yeah. What kind of impact would that have on the opiate crisis? And the second part is on crime as a whole. In Abbotsford?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is something I've been working on for the last, well over 5-6 years. I also represent the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police and the BC Association of Chiefs of Police on this. And in 2020, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police and I was leading the Special Purpose Committee. We put out a report recommending that we decriminalize small amounts of illicit drugs. At the time we saw the overdose crisis, it was just, you know, unbelievable, and the devastation it was causing for families and individuals. And what we were doing wasn't really making a difference. And we needed to look differently on how we would focus. So from us, from our perspective, and I was just on the core planning table that helped the province put together the recommendations for the decriminalized model here. And all that to say is that, you know, we need to support individuals. We need to find them healthcare pathways, the criminal justice system. I've been a police officer for 32 years. Did not change that. But we need to find people, if we're going to do this, we need a variety of different opportunities for people to get engaged in the healthcare system and find the supports that they need. But, you know, so we were very engaged in that conversation. Originally, they were talking about much higher amounts that people can possess. We've been able to get that reduced, which we're happy about. But your other question about how it'll impact crime. What we do know is a lot of the crimes that are committed by people who, you know, we often call them survival crimes. They're trying to get money for their drugs. And what I do hope is that if we can help somebody, whether it be a safer supply, whether it be treatment, whether it be peer support, that hopefully a person isn't breaking or committing crime in order to support their drug addiction. An example is if someone has a $100 a day drug habit, you know, they have to steal roughly $1,000 a day to support that habit. Because really? when they sell the stolen items, it typically goes for about 10 cents, depending really? What it is. So you can just see that one individual who is not working, who is using drugs, how much of an impact that can have on our community. So the only thing I'll just say, Sarita, is that, you know, healthcare is saying this should be a health priority, and they need to step up now, and they need to take this on full and address this crisis. And if they do that, I think we can make a difference.
And now I wanted to jump into a topic that we've been dealing for the last couple of years was the COVID-19 pandemic. We had a health crisis, that everyone knows, but we also had social crisis as well. Domestic violence numbers were going up. Crime as a whole was starting to tick up. How was the situation in this city?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, none of us ever expected to have to police a global pandemic like COVID. And I can tell you that was a very challenging year, a couple of years for our police department. And I think it will continue to be. You know, we did see property crime reduced during the COVID periods, in part because, you know, a lot of people were at home, working from home. So, you know, the break and enters and a lot of the thefts weren't occurring at the same level. As we talked about with, you know, some of the CERB payments, we did see, you know, the people who, as I told you, might have had to, you know, resort to crime to steal or to support a habit were actually getting CERB payments, which we do know contributed to, you know, buying drugs. We did see, like you said, mental health and certainly domestic violence, you know, it increased, not dramatically, but it's something we definitely watched. And we think that it was actually quite a bit higher and just unreported. You know, our violent crime rate stayed roughly the same. But, you know, there has been, we have certainly seen, you know, a more significant increase in mental health, the calls around mental health, the impacts to families, certainly now with the recession and things that we're kind of on the board on. It's just the pressures and the impacts that it's having on families in our community. So that's driving up our call load. And it's also driving up, you know, those calls that are very challenging, you know, for our members to attend to. You know, one of the other things that came up too was, you know, as a police agency, we want it to people to be able to make free choices. And you know, and it was hard when we were having to enforce certain, you know, COVID restrictions. And especially, I know that was very confrontational or controversial when it came to the churches. And we really took an approach where we did not issue tickets unless it was really a significant matter, and really just tried to work with the different communities to try to find, you know, reasonable solutions.
As we saw it in the States, just across the border from us, certain cities and certain police forces were having difficulty policing mask mandates and vaccine mandates. And how were people in general here? Were you getting complaints from people for having illegal parties or, you know, not wearing masks? How was the situation?
Yeah, it's we did get complaints about, you know, illegal gatherings or gatherings that were in excess of what was permitted. We did get calls about, you know, church services that continued despite some of the restrictions. Our model was, you know, just to really go in and mediate, to educate, and to use enforcement as a very, very last tool. You know, it like I said, was a very polarizing at sometimes, you know, discussion with people. But, you know, for us, we wanted to make sure that people were safe and healthy. I really believe that, you know, enforcing a lot of those mandates should have been a health priority and a provincial priority, and not the police. We talk a lot about the police, you know, not being involved in mental health and public health matters like drug use. But, you know, here was an incident where we got, you know, more involved than I think we should have at times. And so that's why we really tried to take an educational approach versus an enforcement approach whenever possible.
And now I wanted to talk about something that this city has been dealing with for about a decade now, the gang crisis that we were seeing. How is the gang crisis? Because when we watch national media or provincial media, one gets a picture that it's kind of out of control. What is the true picture of the gang crisis?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. You know, over the last 3 years, and I don't want to jinx ourselves, we have not had a homicide that is directly linked to the gang conflict. We have certainly seen over COVID, we did see, you know, the gang conflict really spike in other communities, you know, especially to the west of us, who had an increase. But I can tell you that we in Abbotsford have put in a significant amount of Abbey PD work into being proactive. So, you know, 4 years ago, we started a gang enforcement team or unit. We also developed a program called Pathways. We received government grants, and we got an exceptional a person by the name of Harpreet, exceptional you know, scholar who came in and really looked at what are the best approaches and how to support youth and to divert them from gang activity. And he created the Pathways program. And we now have gang intervention officers and also community members who, you know, work with youth that are very vulnerable. So here, you know, we do know that members of gangs still reside. We do know that activities involving gangs reside, but they also know that this is not a very conducive community because of our policing efforts to engage in violent behavior or gang behavior. And I think, you know, sadly, what's happened is it's been pushed to other communities, but we're very alive to it. And we have really, you know, as far as the violence and the shootings that are related directly to the gangs, that has definitely been reduced.